Thank you. So this is my third and final talk. So so far we've done the first two faces of B-type D-brains on a cloud BIO, which, if you like, the first lecture I described things in terms of coherent sheaves. The second lecture was in terms of quivers. And this lecture is going to be about matrix factorization. So, I was a bit rushed at the end of the last lecture, so I'd like to just add a couple of references that I ought to mention. This thing I mentioned at the end about the quiver being the same in different phases, this came from some work by the mathematicians Kawamata and von den Berg, at least in some simple cases. I tried to generalize it recently in a paper with limited success. There's an interesting paper that came out recently by Herbst, Torrey, and Page, which derives the same result using the gauged linear sigma model. So anyway, last time I was focusing on the example of CP mod Z3 and its blow up. OP2 minus 3. And there I showed that the bounded drive category of coherent sheaves on X, I'm going to write it this way. It was given by the derived category of graded S modules divided by something T, where T is the subcategory generated by modules annihilated by the ideal X, Y, Z. So this is just the statement that sheaves can be written in terms of S modules. And then I argued that this was equal to the derived category of quiver representations, which let me... There were three arrows going from each node to each other node. Let me write it vaguely as that. So that's a rough sketch of what we did last time. Now what I'd like to do now is a compact Calabria. And the simplest compact Calabria I know of is the elliptic curve, say. And a way of writing an elliptic curve is as a cubic. I'll write it in this form in CP2. So I can embed this compact Calabria inside this non-compact Calabria. I take this CP2 and then I just look at the cubic inside that. So somehow I'm embedding the compact case in this case that we already did. So I'd like to know if I can describe the derived category of the elliptic curve in terms of the stuff I already did here. Now, rather confusingly, I always like to refer to my target space as X. So from now on in this lecture, when I write down X, I mean the compact Calabria, not the non-compact, not the non-compact one that I had over here. So somehow we want to enforce F equals X plus Y, X cube plus Y cube plus Z cube is zero. And at this point, I could try and take the physics route or the math route to describing what the derived category here is. I'm going to follow the math route. I'm going to just do the mathematics of how to describe the derived category in this case. And I'll mention what the physics route could have been at the end. But the idea is that we're going to somehow look at matrices. So a matrix factorization F consists of a pair of matrices, call them M by M matrices, where M is any number. I'm not going to put any constraints on M. I'll call these matrices alpha and beta, such that the product of alpha and beta is equal to the product of beta and alpha, which is equal to F times the identity. And we're going to see that the D-brains are going to be related to all possible matrix factorizations. I'm going to build a category based on matrix factorizations, and this category is going to be equal to the derived category of X. So, let's consider a ring. Let's consider the ring of functions on the elliptic curve. At least in terms of the homogeneous coordinates. So this is the homogeneous coordinate ring of X. And just as I did last time, if I want to describe a sheaf on X, I could try and write it in terms of an A module. The sheaves on X are given by A modules. And I have a similar statement to before, that the derived category of elliptic curve is simply the derived category of graded A modules divided out by the stuff which is supported at x equals y equals z equals 0, which again I'll call T. So I could try and do what I did last time. So I could try and take any A module, resolve it in terms of some basic set of A modules, such as A itself and some shifts of A, and see if I can write all of the possible A modules in terms of some basic set. Well, things go wrong fairly quickly. And let me give the central example of what goes wrong. So suppose, for example, I consider the module M, which is A over X, Y, Z. Now, this, of course, corresponds to a trivial sheaf. I mean, this is the typical member of T. But let's not worry about that at the moment. This is a module, and let's see if I can write it in terms of a pre-resolution to begin with. So you try and write down a pre-resolution of M. So of course I have X, Y, Z coming from A. I have A going to that, then I have X, Y, Z. And here I'd have A minus 1 cubed. Okay. Then if I was doing this yesterday, I'd now continue with the Kozul resolution. So I'd have something like 0 minus Z Y minus Z 0 X minus Y X 0. But because I've got the constraint that X cubed plus Y cubed plus Z cubed is 0, I actually have another element here. I also have a possibility of X squared, Y squared, Z squared. After all, X, Y, Z composed with that column is going to give me 0. So here I actually have an A minus 2 cubed plus A minus 3. And I keep going. And unfortunately, I discover that I keep going and going and going and going. This is a free resolution that never terminates. So I can't just describe all possible A modules in terms of some finite set of free A modules. However, what I discover, and this is a general fact that was first observed by Eisenberg, is that after a while I get a nice pattern in the resolution. Namely, it becomes periodic of period 2. If I look at these matrices, all of a sudden they start to always be 4x4 matrices, and those 4x4 matrices are of type alpha, beta, etc. So what I discover is that eventually my matrices are alternately this and this. And you can ask any computer package on commutative algebra such as Macaulay 2 to do this, and it's very easy to show this. So this module here gives me these two matrices, and you'll note if I multiply those two matrices together, I get a matrix factorization. If I multiply these two together, I get x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed times the identity. And Eisenberg showed that this is a general pattern, that given any module, compute the free resolution, and ultimately it will be of period 2, and the product of these two things will be a matrix factorization. So this is for A modules where A is of this form. A is some kxyz over some function. So, this is a way of turning A modules into matrix factorizations. And we said that A modules are sheaves. So at first, if you're very naive, you might boldly say, okay, well, you give me a sheaf, you give me a D-brain, and I turn it into a matrix factorization. Well, life is not quite so simple, because after all, M is trivial in dx, because after all, M was A over xyz. That's precisely the skyscraper sheaf should have supported at xyz, which is the point that we took out. So M is trivial, but it gives an interesting matrix factorization. And conversely, if I look at A itself, A is an A module, and of course as a sheaf, the sheaf it corresponds to is the structure sheaf, which is the D-brain that wraps the whole space. Well, if I do a free resolution of A, I get a resolution which is finite. Now, if some module has a resolution which is finite, then of course the asymptotic behavior of the resolution is just 0 goes to 0 goes to 0 goes to 0. So that I would consider to be a trivial matrix factorization. So anything that has a finite free resolution gives a trivial matrix factorization. So the relationship between D-brains and matrix factorizations is not just do the resolution and look what the matrix factorization is. So we have to work a bit harder to see exactly how the derived category of coherent sheaves is equivalent to the a category, which I've yet to define carefully, of matrix factorization. Sorry? Well, my ultimate claim is to derive a category in terms of matrix factorizations and tell you that it's equivalent to the D-brain category. So all I've done so far is that I've told you that somehow matrix factorizations come from modules. I mean, I haven't proven anything yet. What I'm saying is that my ultimate goal is to prove that matrix factorizations do describe D-brains somehow. This is a way of getting matrix factorizations from modules, but it's not working yet. But ultimately, I will show that this kind of construction will give me matrix factorization for debrain. But I haven't done that yet. I mean that basically, if you like, the zero by zero matrix, well, I haven't got into any physics yet, but I'm just saying that my definition of a matrix factorization is to look at the asymptotic form of the free resolution here, and the problem is I'm getting zero by zero matrices, asymptotic. Well, that's the kind of extreme case where uppercase M is zero. So, I mean, it's kind of trivial. Okay, so let's try and be more systematic about how we might describe the derived category current sheaves in terms of matrix factorizations. And it's similar to this idea, but you've just got to be more careful. Now, I think the best place to read this is there's a paper by Abramoff and Grayson that describe the algorithm for computing acts, which is implemented in Macaulay 2. So this is a very explicit hands-on way of computing acts, and it turns out that what they use is exactly the construction that we need to turn a sheaf into a matrix factorization. So what do they do? Oh, this is a computer algebra package. So if you have some modules and you actually want to compute the x between those modules, then the easiest way to do it is to type it into this program. And this is the algorithm that the program uses, and it happens to be exactly what we want. So given an A module, where A is associated to a hypersurface, as in the above case, or actually, everything will also work if this is a complete intersection. This is actually a general statement that this D-brains as matrix factorizations will always work for hypersurfaces and complete intersections. I'm not aware of it working for anything more than that. Where do I assume it's Clavier? Let's assume it's Clavier. I can't remember exactly where I need that condition in this proof. Okay, so define a new ring S by going to the ambient space so S is the coordinate ring of the space in which we've embedded this hypersurface and adding a new variable. Which I will call P. Well, it's one for the hypersurface case, and if it's a complete intersection, it's one for every equation. Well, so here it was CP2. It's the space that the hypersurface lives in. Now this P. Also has an extra grading. So this ring S was a graded ring because, after all, this was CP2. You can extend this to toric geometry and have all kinds of weird gradings. But we include another grading so I add one more grading. So now I'd have two gradings rather than one in this case. And the new variable P is graded with respect to the new grading, and the old variable does not. P also has a grading with respect to the old variables, but I don't want to get too bogged down in detail. So view M as an S module, ignoring P action for now. Write a free resolution. So now we've gone to the ambient space. It turns out that the free resolution is always finite. Basically, there's a theorem that in affine algebraic geometry, if you do a free resolution of a module, it will always be finite so long as the affine variety was smooth. The reason why this didn't terminate was because we had x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed is zero, which as an equation in affine space is singular at the origin. That's why this wasn't guaranteed to terminate. Now I've gone to S, which is the ambient space. The ambient space is a boring, smooth space, and so any resolution will actually be finite. Yeah, right. I mean, I've kind of added in this variable P, but I'm ignoring P for now. So, yeah, it's S, but without the variable P. Sorry? Well, there's this extra grading where P has actually got... Yeah, it's a separate grading. It actually turns out to have grade 2 in the XML. It's also got a grading in the old gradings, and that grading happens to be the degree of F. But that's actually more information that we need for now. Well, yeah, I'm cheating a bit. S is ultimately KPXYZ. But for now, let's pretend that it's KXYZ. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay. Let's do a few resolutions. I'm kind of using these two things at the same time. So what have I written here? Well, I want to take the free resolution and I want to roll it up into one thing. So if I have a resolution that, say, look like F2 goes to F1, I suppose I should use lower. What I wanted to do is I want to think of that as a map from F. I could write it in terms of this. Obviously, the differential maps the sum of all these guys to the sum of all those guys. And that's exactly the way that I'm writing it here. I'm adding up all of the free things, and it maps to another sum of all of the free things. And the extra grading that I've invoked is actually going to be the homological grading here. So I have an extra grading, which is going to be 0, 1, 2, etc. And that's in this map here. So C is the sum of K, X, Y, Z module of free X, Y, Z modules. The last term. Yeah, so take the free resolution of M, then subtract M out. I'm left with something which is quasi-isomorphic to M. And this thing here, I'm going to write in that form. So I don't have any non-trivial maps here. I mean, F1 gets mapped to F0, F2 gets mapped to F1. Zero, yeah. Okay. So then define a bunch of more D's. So D0 is DC. And then I iteratively define some higher D's, which are defined as minus F times the identity on C, if N is 1. And then something which It's just also computable. So it's a problem that you can systematically solve. I mean, the Macaulay 2 program can do it, for example. You can just find out what D's you could write down here which would satisfy this. This was the F that was the hypersurface function. Yeah. Sorry, not equal to zero. So neither alpha nor beta is equal to zero in that sense. D0 dn plus dn d0. Okay, so this iteratively defines the dn's. There's an ambiguity in what the dn's could be. This doesn't uniquely define them, but it doesn't matter about the ambiguity. So just choose a bunch of dn's such that this is true. Then define d as a sum over pn dn as a map d that takes c dot to c dot. So I considered these to be a sum of free kxyz modules. Well, replace kxyz by s, so now my c dots really are s modules. How does what? P is a variable in the ring S. So this is a polynomial in P, which now maps this S module to this S module. S is K, P, X, Y, Z. There's no mods. Okay. Okay, so this all seems a bit technical, so let's see what we've actually done. One can prove e squared is equal to, well, it turns out it's a minus sign, but I've defined it, minus p times w times the identity f. Sorry. If I write w from now on, I mean f, but hopefully I shall write f. So eg, for the case, M was A over XYZ. You can compute what this matrix D is. Let me just write it out, seeing as I've made you endure all this algebra. Well, I'll just write down the first few lines. Sorry? Oh, it's minus 3. Yeah. Yeah, it's minus the grading of that. Yeah, sorry. So dot, dot, dot. So this is a 8x8 matrix. And we can always split C dot into even and odd parts, where even and oddness is with respect to the homological grading, such that D is equal to, in our block diagonal form, something like alpha and beta, which of course immediately implies that D squared is alpha beta is beta alpha equals the identity times that. So this, the fact that this matrix squares to the identity times F is the same thing as saying that there's a matrix factorization. Sorry. Right. Yeah, of some module M. So we're just given some module.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right, right, right. So the only interesting place where P arrives is because of this polynomial that I define at the top. Yeah, because with respect to the homological degree, the new grading, D has got degree minus one. Yeah, even with all these things here, yeah. Right, yeah. I've got so many gradings around that I don't want to... It's identity times F, and F has got grade minus 2 with respect to the homological degree. So this works. F is just a function of X, Y, and Z, which has got degree 0. Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they should. Because these D's should be. Yeah, if I square it, I get. Oh, yeah, sorry, I did P. Yeah. With a minus. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, let's. Maybe I'll stop. Okay. No, I shouldn't have. Which it is, because P is degree minus 2. No, I've defined it to be degree minus 2. Yeah, definitely. Degree, well, it's whatever it needs to be to the thing that I erase. Yeah, right. 2n plus 1, up to 2n minus 1, yeah. 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 Everything should work. After all, it's programmed in. It's programmed into Macaulay, so which is very good at keeping track of grading. It's much better than I am on the blackboard, by the way. So, anyway, what I claim this gives is this yields an equivalent. Well, I'm going to leap all the way to the derived category. The derived category of graded A modules and a category which I'll call this, which is the notation due to Orloff, who has also worked on this, script W. So I need to define what this category is, where script W is P times F. So let me define this category. So objects in P, G, R, S, W are graded matrix factorizations of script W, which is here. Perhaps with a minus sign in. I think a minus sign in is not that. And the morphisms are, let's just say they're maps modulo homotopy. And let me draw a diagram to define both what I mean by a map and a homotopy. So a matrix factorization, if I split it into even and odd parts like this, I've got something that looks like C0 and C1. With these maps going back and forth, whose product is equal to script W. So let me write it in that form. And suppose I give you another matrix factorization. I'll write onto that. So a morphism between two matrix factorizations is simply a pair of vertical maps, F0 and F1, such that all possible squares commute. So that's an obvious definition. It's just the analog of a chain map if I were to unwrap this into a chain. And a homotopy is similarly defined in terms of a chain homotopy. If I have a pair of maps going from C1 to D0 and C0 to D1, then a null homotopic map is one where F0 is D1 H0 plus H1 C0, and F1 is D0 H1 plus H0 C1. So any such map is considered to be a zero morphism in this category. Yes. Yeah. So it's just homological algebra to go from this construction I did to this state. Yes, right, yeah. So all the gradings have to take into account. There's the grading that we were given of CP2 side, plus this other grading. And it's got to respect both gradings. So this is a theorem. No, this is not null homotopic. This is a non-trivial thing. So it's a non-trivial D-brain, and I will come back to what this D-brain is at the end. Well, the difference is that I have a P here. And that makes everything quite different. It gives me more structure. So, for example, if I give you the A module A itself, then that now corresponds to matrix factorization of P times F. So the 1x1 matrix factorization of P times F is now the A module A. So I've got something that's non-trivial. That's why I have an equivalence now between the derived category of graded A modules and all of these possible matrix factorizations. Yeah. Right. Right. No, it's not, because I'm not claiming yet that this is equivalent to the... I haven't told you that this is a derived class of current sheaves. I'm doing graded A module. And as it's a graded A module, it's certainly not zero. So, we know that the derived category of X is equal to the derived category of graded A modules divided by this so-called torsion modules, i.e. the modules which are annihilated by the ideal X, Y, Z. So therefore, this is equal to the derived category of matrix factorizations of curly W divided by T. So that's the derived category. That's a good question, yeah. So T does not naturally, I mean, the way that I embed T in the matrix factorization category is to go via the isomorphism with greater A. One can also show that, and this should be a fairly obvious statement, that the derived category of these matrix factorizations, which I'm not sure I need this result. Let me know if you write it down. Yeah. I'm not going to do this. Just be wasting time. Okay. Okay, so so what have we achieved? Well, I've written any coherent sheaf or any complex of coherent sheafs can be written in terms of a matrix factorization. By the way, what's interesting is that even though there's a D here, this isn't the derived category of matrix factorizations. This is just the category of matrix factorizations. The homological degree is kind of built into it. So this was complexes of A modules. I just turn these into some great big matrix factorization. And all of the information about which module was in which term in the complex is just turned into the homological degree data of the three S modules here. So anyway, I've turned a D brain into a great big matrix factorization. But I've got this extra variable P. And you might argue if I've actually made any progress. Right. Yeah. Absolutely correct. So last time I mentioned the phases picture that in this minus three line bundle over CP2, that's kind of one phase where you've blown up the orbifold, and there's the other phase where we can blow it down. So in the resolved phase, we have the ambient space is it's a line bundle over the ambient space. It's OP2 minus 3. And indeed, this was the case where T is annihilated by powers of x, y, z. Now, the other phase is C3 mod Z3. This is the blown down orbifold. And in that case, T is annihilated by powers of T. Just worried that I haven't justified using the same letter P. But it's the same P, that's what I need to justify. Can I do that quickly? Sorry? Right. Yeah. Can't think of a quick way of doing a rigorous justification of the fact that it's the same P. Well, what I did yesterday was I described the minus three Lie bundle over over CP2. And everything was described in terms of sheaves, and I referred the, I described sheaves as modules, but I ignored things which were annihilated by powers of X, Y, Z. Now, I discovered that if I instead, this is yesterday, I discovered that if I instead considered things which were killed by P, then instead the target space is C3 mod Z3. Right. Well, yesterday my ring was was K of P, comma X, comma Y, comma Z. So any module which is killed by a power of X, Y, Z. A is K X, Y, Z over F. I'm being cursed by this P which keeps coming. I keep tensoring by K of P, and I keep hiding where I'm putting this functor. This is my problem. I can, I can think of ways of solving this problem, but I can't think of ways of solving it in less than 10 minutes. This is my problem. But I have 10 minutes left. I think I'll just have to skip this problem. So let's assume that there's some secret method by which I can identify this P, which I was talking about yesterday, with the P that I was discussing today. As Ronan said, they certainly have similar properties. And you can argue that they're the same P, because that's the only way that I can proceed at this point. Well, anyway, dividing by T is the same thing as setting P as 1 in the orbital. That's what I argued yesterday. Perhaps one should be T large radius limit, one should be T orbifold. It is always the, look, T is always the ideal generated by X, Y, and Z. No. T is always a subcategory of something annihilated by powers of the ideal, X, Y, Z. The problem I'm having is that this question mark may or may not include P. And I know I could do this right, but I can't think of an easy way of getting it right from where I am now. Okay, so, So as I claimed yesterday, this is the same thing. In the orbifold phase, you basically set this extra variable P equals to 1. So in this phase, dx is equal to the derived category of graded, sorry, the category of matrix factorizations of graded B modules, where B is K, X, Y, Z. And F is X cubed plus Y cubed. So the result I'm claiming, which I kind of messed up the proof of, is that in the orbifold phase, when I shrink this CP2 down, the category of D brains is now matrix factorizations. But matrix factorizations without the p, because I've set p equal to 1, because I'm in the orbifold phase. This is called the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold phase. So what we've proven, or should have proven if I'd been a little bit more careful, is that the derived category of D brains, which is given by coherent sheaves in the large radius phase, in the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold phase is simply matrix factorizations of x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed without the p. Yeah, well, the minus sign doesn't really do much. But let's set people to minus 1. And this is a result which was known to physicists. So the idea came from some work by Kantsevich, and then it was justified by, well, I'm getting to the physicist. It was then justified by Kapustin and Lee, who did a Dirac computation in the topological field theory for Landau-Ginzburg theory. And again, this more recent paper of Herb, Torrey, and Page also has a kind of different derivation of this map from the point of view of the gauged linear sigma model. Right, and the equivalence between the derived category of coherent sheaves and matrix factorization is first written down by Olaf. And I haven't quite given you exactly how we go between these two categories yet, so I'll do that last. And this is this was also first worked out by Olaf, but and his method is very similar to what I'm going to do, but I think what I'm going to describe is a little bit easier. So anyway, given an element of dx, what is the associated matrix factor? So we can take something like the point on the elliptic curve, or we could take the structure sheaf of the elliptic curve, and I could try and find out in the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold phase what is the corresponding matrix factorization of x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed. And you follow the process of what we did today and yesterday. So e.g., a point. Let's take the zero brain. And so a point on x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed is zero. I can put, for example, x plus y is zero and z is zero. There's a point on the elliptic curve. Well, we know what the corresponding module is. It's the module which is exactly killed by this ideal. So we can write a free resolution for it. Let me shift the grading by 2, because it doesn't actually do any harm. So this has a Kozul resolution in terms of S1 plus S1 and S2. So when I work out what I call C dot is simply the sum of S plus S1 plus S1 plus S2. And we get a matrix factorization given with the P's added onto this, as I did last time, and we simply get that this corresponds to. So, this Kozul resolution here defines a thing I call D0. You've got to then compute what D1 is, you then define D as being V0 plus P times D1. It turns out you don't need anything higher than D1. But I've never found an example yet which requires anything higher than D1. But in general, you do need higher one. And then set P equal to 1 to get the Landau-Ginzburg phase, and you get the following matrix factorization. So a point corresponds to this this matrix factorization. Now, this was very easy. All we did was the matrix factorization and that corresponded to the pre-resolution. But there was an important step here. That's that I started out in a large radius phase. I started out as something I recognized on the elliptic curve embedded in CP2. And then I went to the Landau-Ginzburg phase. But I know yesterday that I can write all these things in terms of S1s and S2s, which is what I did here, and I can carry those generating D-brains from the large radius limit phase to the orbifold phase. Now let me do another example, just to finish, where we do the structure sheet. Let's do the D-brain that wraps the whole of the elliptic curve. So what is OX? Well, OX, well, let's do OX3, because it's a little bit easier. OX3, well, I've got to write that as a free resolution of S modules. Well, to do that, I'm going to do S3, because the S times F. Okay, this is a short exact sequence, where I'm mixing up a bit what I mean by sheaves and modules, but S goes to S3 is precisely the sheaf supported on the elliptic curve. So I've written this in terms of S's and S3's, but the problem is that S3 is not in my basic set. What I should do is I should rewrite that in terms of S. You need to write it in terms of S1 and S2, and then I'll be able to see what this looks like in the Landau-Ginzburg phase, and what you do very quickly is we have I know I've got the following relation. So this is precisely the M that I had last time. So M is exactly whatever it is, S divided by XYZ. Okay. Which I know is trivial in the large radius limit phase. So what I can do is I can take my complex, S goes to S3. So this represents my D-brain, OX3, because that is quasi-isomorphic to that. I am free to add into this M, because M is trivial. Okay? Adding this doesn't make any difference to the derived category occurrence sheet. However, what it will do is that it will cancel out that S3 and leave me with S1s and S2s. So this now is something that's purely written in terms of, S1 and S2. So now I go to the Landau-Ginzburg phase. And I notice that now I have this S. So I have exactly the same thing. But S goes to S3. Corresponds to the matrix factorization F equals 1 times F. So after all, this is an operation by F, and this is trivial. you can show that the if I've got the matrix factorization 1 times F, that the identity map is homotopic to the zero map, and therefore this is a trivial object in the Kaspi of matrix factorizations. So we are left with M3. That's all we're left with. So this should be an M3. So this yields the 4x4 matrix factorization we wrote down earlier. Okay, so I hope you're able to follow this because I did it kind of quickly. But what I've proven is that the object that corresponds to the structure sheaf of the elliptic curve actually corresponds to the 4x4 matrix factorization that I wrote down at the start, which was associated to this guy. And you can do this in general. You can just pick any coherent sheaf that you want, and you can turn it into a matrix factorization. Well, why is this useful? I mean, you might ask, okay, I've proven that two different looking things are the same. It turns out that for computations with deep brains, such as computing correlation functions and working out the associated superpotential or A infinity algebras, computer algebra packages such as the Macaulay 2 systems work very nicely with these matrix factorizations. And you can calculate much more easily if you write things in terms of matrix factorizations than if you've got things in terms of sheaves. So anyway, that's a good place to stop. Thanks. Yeah, so this is always true for a hypersurface. Basically something that corresponds to a smooth projective variety. So I want a hypersurface with an isolated singularity. Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Well, I mean, for the case I'm looking at, I want it to be homogeneous. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Right. So no, if it's a complete intersection, you don't get something that's periodic of period two. You get something more complicated. But Eisenberg told you what the more complicated thing is. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the analog statement here is that I need more p's. There's more than one p once you go to a complete intersection. Sorry? Yeah. Yeah, you just add one gradient. They've all got homological degree two. I mean, I should say, by the way, that one of the amazing things about this is that the linear sigma model knew about these extra variables. And that's why I called them P. When Witten wrote down the linear sigma model that corresponds to a complete intersection, he introduced exactly the same variable. Yeah, he didn't. He used uppercase X with a subscript, which is the Macaulay notation as well. I think actually it was Gullickson who was the first to notice this structure.